mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, after several months of discussion and consideration of all their options, local officials have come up with a long-term plan for Hancock County's recycling program. Commissioner Mike Pepple joins us to discuss. Also this morning, celebrating Small Business Week. Where would our economy be without the revenue they generate, the jobs they create, and the myriad of ways they give back to the community? And it's a beautiful time of the year to get outdoors with programs and activities in the month of May from the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rumschlag will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. Tourism officials in Detroit are saying that the economic impact of the NFL draft and the record-breaking crowds that they saw for the draft this past week and over the weekend, the economic impact could exceed $150 to $175 million. The president and CEO of Visit Detroit, Claude Molinari, says that they are still finalizing the numbers and will have a final report sometime in June, but he predicts the amount, the economic impact, the dollar figure will exceed estimates. And I would say that's a pretty safe bet because, again, record-breaking crowds. An estimated 775,000 people attended the event in the Motor City, while another 34 million people watched the draft on TV. I don't know that people in Detroit really care about the 34 million watching on TV, but they do care very much about the three quarters of a million plus that actually attended in person. Mayor Mike Duggan says the city should be proud of the warm welcome that they provided last week. So kudos all the way around. It was quite the event. And it certainly made for some attention-grabbing visuals in the when they panned out and showed the size of the crowd. Even, I mean, I get it for day number one of the draft, the first round, that's always the big day. But even later, I was watching on Saturday, and I was stunned by the size of the crowds, and they got into like the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round of the draft, and people were still there. So it was pretty impressive. So congratulations, way to go, Detroit. That was pretty impressive. Some other relatively local news here. Former Ohio Attorney General Richard Cordray has announced that he will be stepping down from his position in the Biden administration. Mr. Cordray wrote in a letter on Friday he would not return for another term as the chief operating officer for federal student aid. It's part of the U.S. Department of Education that oversees the government student loan program. Richard Cordray was a one-time gubernatorial candidate in the state of Ohio, lost to Mike DeWine back in 2018, assumed his role with FSA in March of 2021, with his time in the position coming to an official end next week. Is it this week or next week? Is it today? Or is it anyway? It's coming to an official end within the next week. We'll just put it that way. He did say that he would stay on through June to help with the transition. So his official time in the position is coming to an end, but he will stay on to help with the transition during his time with FSA, Ms. Cordray led the department in giving more than 4 million Americans $153 billion in student loan forgiveness and helped set up the department's repayment plan after a 3.5-year layoff because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And, of course, that's one of the legacies, the Cordray era at FSA. Also, over the last few months, changes to how students applied for financial aid have been plagued with delays and technical glitches, and we've talked about that has been very much in the news. The confusion surrounding the new version of the FAFSA, which has caused frustration for students and for colleges and universities as well. for the enrollment period for the coming school year. Before joining the FSA, Mr. Cordray also served as the first director of the newly created U.S. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and he was appointed in that position by President Barack Obama in 2012, served until 2017. I just mentioned that involving Richard Cordray. A couple of other items among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Did you happen to see this yesterday? Such a terrific story. The winners of that record-setting, or nearly record-setting, $1.3 billion Powerball jackpot that was the winning ticket sold in Oregon. You remember when everybody was, there's $1.3 billion in the Powerball about a month ago. Three people have stepped forward to claim the jackpot. Cheng Seifon and his wife, Duan Pen, are splitting half the jackpot, and a friend of theirs, Liza Chow, gets the other half. They took a lump sum, so after taxes, they divided $422 million. Mr. Seifon, who goes by the American name Charlie, turns out he's been battling cancer for 6 years and has been on disability. He immigrated to the U.S. in 1994 and worked as a machinist making aircraft parts before being diagnosed with cancer. And now he has won the Powerball jackpot. So, I mean, that's all kinds of awesome. The first thing he and his wife plan to do is pay for his medical care, because obviously they've been racking up bills for this 6 year cancer battle, and they say they want to buy a house. That is really cool to see. And he said that in winning the jackpot, he felt blessed. And that's something. You can stand up there amid a 6 year cancer battle and say, I feel blessed. That is truly looking on the bright side of life there. Love that story. So I know the week just started, but it is never too early to start making your plans for the weekend. The brand 50 Best has ranked the 50 best bars in North America for 2024. 50 best bars. I won't go through the entire list, but the Handshake Speakeasy in Mexico City takes the top prize this year. Also, New York City was where represented on the list. Four of the top 10 were located in the Big Apple. Super Bueno was number two. So those are the top two bars from the top 50 best bars in North America in 2024. New York had seven of the top 20, and Mexico City also had four in the top 10 rankings. So New York and Mexico City really dominated the rankings. Nowhere, I was a bit shocked, nowhere was the Old Stony Lodge to be found on the top 50. Or for that matter, the West End Tavern was not on the list either. So I'm thinking that they just didn't look hard enough. Finally, among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. See, this is what you get into when you have all of these kind of specialty foods and specialty diets and all of that. A vegan cheese has been yanked from the competition it was on track to win, leading some people to question, what is cheese? So here's the story. The Good Food Awards were set to name California's blue cheese. Climax Foods from California, their blue cheese, was about to win the award for best cheese, but the entry was disqualified at the last minute because the cheese in question used kokum butter instead of... Oh, okay, here it is. It says the cheese in question was disqualified for having used kokum butter in the past, but no longer does because it is vegan. So no butter. At least that's the speculation. The exact reason for the disqualification was not made clear. But those who wanted to see it disqualified basically said, if cheese isn't from milk, if there's not milk, then what is cheese? So big controversy over the Best Cheese, the Good Food Awards. It was on track to be a vegan cheese, but if it doesn't have milk and it doesn't have butter, is it really cheese? People want to know. I guess, see, this is how complicated things get when we have all of these. We try to cater to everyone's specialty diets and everyone's preferences. I love that. That's why I just eat regular good old cheese. I saw that story and I was, what is cheese? And it's the question of the day. This is what we have come to in this country. What is cheese? We can't really even define it anymore. All right, fine. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started. Let's move on.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Gradual clearing today with a high around 70. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the mid-50s. The Tiffin Police Department says an investigation is underway into a student's death at Tiffin University. Tiffin Fire Rescue responded to a distress call at Zahn Hall on Sunday and upon arrival confirmed the passing of a male student. The Tiffin Police Department says preliminary findings suggest that the student's death was not a result of foul play, but rather possibly due to a medical emergency. However, a comprehensive investigation is underway to confirm the absence of any criminal activity. Get more in this story on our website. A new jury duty exemption has been added in Ohio. With the signing of House Bill 34, mothers can now put their baby's needs first without the fear of fines and jail time.
When it comes to participating as a juror, oftentimes Americans find themselves torn between their civic duty and other priorities. Now, mothers breastfeeding babies that are 1 year of age or younger can request an exemption based on undue or extreme physical or financial hardship. Ohio's Department of Health recorded more than 75% of infants in Ohio are breastfed.
WTOL 11's Maya May reporting. The National Alliance on Mental Illness in Hancock County is holding their biggest fundraiser of the year in a few weeks.
Mental health is such an overwhelming thing, so if you're just not quite sure where to turn, what to do next, we're a great resource that we're there for you. We can help support you through that process.
The Color Me Happy Walk and 5K Color Run is coming up on May 11th. You can learn more about the event and get signed up to participate in it in this story on our website. If you were driving on East Lima Street in Findlay on Monday, you couldn't miss that the house at 128 East Lima Street was being torn down. The house was a rental, and the owner said he has no immediate plans for the lot. The house is located between South Main Street and Beach Avenue. See video of the demolition process in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So now our cover story this morning, after several months of discussion and consideration of various options, local officials have come up with a plan for the future of Hancock County's recycling program. Commissioner Mike Pepple is with us to discuss this morning. Mike, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
I appreciate the invitation.
Kind of ran point on this, I understand, in terms of figuring out what we're going to do moving forward with the recycling program. And it's kind of to bring people up to speed. This actually got started, well, it's been kind of simmering for a while, but really got started in earnest, back in November, December?
Correct.
So kind of take us through the process between then and now and what has happened with this.
Certainly. Well, our current litter laying facility at 1720 East Sandusky Street was originally designed for 100 cars a day. And we've been seeing 300 cars a day.
Wow. So yes. Triple the capacity from which it was designed.
Yes. And you know, we definitely outgrew the site. Mm-hmm. So then the commissioners started looking at different options. One option is to build a new facility, mm-hmm. much larger facility to contain all the recyclable materials. We're very, very pleased that citizens of Hancock County like to recycle, and mm-hmm. we want to promote recycling in our right. county. I heard from my counterpart out in Wood County that they had gone to a third-party provider. And the more we looked into that, also checked with Crawford County, Sandusky, and counties, and they also have gone to the third-party provider. Mm-hmm. Very pleased with the performance. And one of our biggest issues out at Litter Landing is finding enough employees, mm-hmm. and that's everywhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is certainly not an unusual
right.
challenge.
Right. So, you know, commissioners, you know, a new site would probably cost around $1 million, and then could we find enough people to operate it? Mm-hmm. So when I started looking into this other option of having a third-party provider, it seemed to make a lot of sense to move this direction.
So I guess one of the initial questions that some people may have is, why doesn't the county just not just farm it out? Why does it need to go through the county to a third party? But you're actually mandated to have.
Yes, we are. This, yes, the Ohio EPA mandates yeah. us to have a recycling program.
Yeah.
It's all part of our 5-year plan. We have it with a solid waste management district. Mm-hmm. I have a 7-member board that reviews what we're doing at Litter Landing. It's also tied to the landfill. There's a tier fee as a part of your tip fee at the landfill, and, mm-hmm. and that tier fee money goes to operate yeah. Our recycling program.
So that's why you have to address this issue.
Yes.
It's not it's not something where you can just say, okay, we're going to shut it down and let the private sector take care
exactly,
of this.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. So the decision was made to go with a third-party provider, in this case, Rumpke.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about how this will look moving forward then.
Certainly, certainly. Well, the Board of Commissioners decided we'd like to go this route. So the first thing we had to do is go to our Solid Waste Management Committee to get their approval. We had a meeting. They approved it to go ahead. We put out bids, public bids. We hit three companies to bid on it. Mm-hmm. Rumpke was the only company to bid on our program.
Okay.
And it's a 3-year contract, and it's basically $35 per tip of our containers.
Is there any concern that, given the fact that Rumpke was the only one that responded, that if they at some point say we're no longer interested, then they put you in a bind?
Well, Rumpke is very committed to the recycling program. Mm-hmm. They had a 200 million ton facility in Columbus. They just built a brand new one, expanding that, and it's all automated. You know, mm-hmm. when a Hancock County residents drop off the recycling, they don't need to sort it. They'll just throw it into bins. Rumpke mm-hmm. will pick up, depending on the activity, 2 to 3 times a week. They take it to Lima, put it into a bigger container, kind of pack it down, and they take it to Columbus.
So they have this infrastructure
yes.
pretty much down. And they're the ones that are also providing the service to some of the surrounding counties?
Right, right.
So,
different counties I talked to, mm-hmm. they also had bid it out to the public, and Rumpke was the winner every time, and they're very, very pleased with their services.
And obviously, as many folks in our area know, they've been growing and expanding in our community for quite some time. So
right.
It's not like this is their first foray into
Hancock
County,
and,
by any stretch.
Their headquarters in Cincinnati, Ohio, have been around since the 1930s and has continued to grow in Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana.
So the logistics of how this will work, it will still be in a matter of people taking their recyclables to these drop-off points.
Correct, correct.
The way it is now.
We have 15 locations outside the city of Findlay throughout mm-hmm. the villages and townships, and our 16th location is Litter Landing. And what we're going to do is the back lot, if you will, of Litter Landing,
okay.
that's where the containers will be put into like a semicircle arrangement. We're going to have additional lighting installed, cameras, and make it very area very accessible 24/7.
So that will become just a standard drop-off point like some of the other ones. So, which actually answers the other question, which was, does this mean no new litter landing facility will be built?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Because, again, that was one of the conversations some months ago was where would this be located?
And, exactly.
You know, what would it look like?
What do we do about litter landing? We outgrown it. It's landlocked, so we need to do something.
How will this affect the staffing that you do have with respect to litter landing and just the solid waste management district in general?
Right. We currently have 6 employees out at litter landing, and right at the beginning, we explained to them that what we're thinking about and that they would have our opportunity to have employment in other parts of the county. We just met with the head of the different facilities, and we have a plan for all the employees, and we'll be meeting with them this week to explain those plans.
And when does this start? I understand that there's sort of a transition period, so kind of take us through the timeline here.
Sure. We plan on signing the contract today at our Tuesday morning meeting, and then Rumpke has 60 days to gather all the materials and start to switch out. It'll be a gradual switch out. We're going to be storing our existing equipment out at the landfill and bring in these containers, Rumpke containers, to place in our different facilities. So it'll be a gradual transition. When we're going to have marketing materials, we're going to have a marketing plan to explain this all to the people. And so they have a good idea when this is going to happen, and it will be 24/7. It will be, I think, a great addition to our recycling program.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like really from the public-facing standpoint, the only change that people will notice is that litter landing won't be staffed.
Correct.
Other than that, it's going to be pretty much the same as it's always been.
Correct. We will be retaining our recycling manager, and this person, because we have to track, you know, how much we recycle and all this, and this person will be doing that and also be the direct contact with Rumpke, because the Rumpke operational manager lives in Findlay, and the other person that I've met is in Columbus. So, you know, I really like the idea of the operational guys in Findlay, and he's been very responsive to any questions I've had.
And obviously, the financial constraints on the commissioners greatly alleviated by the fact that you don't have to build a new facility or, you know, all of these things. I mean, so that's a big plus for the county in terms and for the taxpayers.
Yes, a big plus. We estimated that cost of a new facility could probably be over $1 million, and then we have, you know, the cost of the employees and operate it, and employees we can't find.
And it's not like you don't have a big construction project already that you're in the middle of.
So. Right. Our $22 million just center is well underway, and hope to have that ready by November this year.
All right, very good. Again, Commissioner Mike Pepple with us this morning talking about the long-term plan for Hancock County's recycling program, which will, as you said, begin the transition process today, actually.
Yes,
Commissioner Pepple, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
So in case you weren't already aware, this is Small Business Week, and Dion Neubauer, the Findlay Hancock County Chamber of Commerce, is with us in the studio this morning. As we were mentioning earlier, where would we be without small businesses?
Absolutely right. Good morning, Chris. As we know, small businesses are the backbone of our community and nation for that moment. So Small Business Administration has been celebrating National Small Business Week for over 60 years. So why don't us, again, chambers across the nation celebrate this week locally here in our community?
I was thinking, you know, one of the things that came out of the pandemic, one of the few good things that came out of the pandemic, was we kind of were reminded of just how important small businesses are, because suddenly, you know, they were not there. Some of them were shut down, or they were facing tremendous challenges that made all kinds of headlines. And it really served as a reminder of just how critical they are for local communities.
You're absolutely right. In fact, when I think of small business owners, I think of resiliency. They are resilient individuals. And what better way to acknowledge the contributions of small business owners this week and throughout the year for that matter?
Yeah. And there's the statistic, as you mentioned, Small Business Week is actually an event of the SBA. They have this statistic of, you know, what, 90% of all new job creation is small businesses. And it's kind of interesting. The SBA defines small businesses maybe a little bit more
500
broadly.
And less. Yeah, more employees.
Maybe a little bit more broadly than we initially think of when we consider small business. But that being said, there is no question that they are the backbone of the local economy.
I would agree. You know, I was thinking as I was arriving here this morning, because I was doing a community tour here recently, and I was sharing that, you know, Findlay, Ohio was created from the gas and oil boom, and from that came the Ohio Oil Company. Mm-hmm. And here we are today. So every business starts small, and we have many wonderful small businesses who have participated and have opened their doors for the solar eclipse. Or, you know, recent events, but they are doing great. But again, they are resilient individuals.
And not all, you know, all businesses start small. Not all of them stay small, but many do. And that's, I guess, you know, one of the other things that we think of is, you know, these entrepreneurs who, you know, start restaurants or start shops and so on. Many of them are perfectly content and perfectly happy to be small businesses for the entirety of their existence.
Because they pour a lot of themselves into their businesses, but also, you know, they're making strong connections within their community. And those who choose to grow and help manage the growth, there are resources available here in our community.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about the revenue that they create, the revenue they generate in terms of tax revenue, in terms of paying their employees, and the way those dollars recycle within the community more so than, you know, the big businesses, the big box stores, and so on. Not that there's anything wrong with those.
No, not at all.
But
because it's estimated that out of every $100 that is spent locally, about $68 goes back into the community through taxes, payroll, etc. So absolutely, you know, we always say that shop local first before you head out to the to outside the Findlay-Hancock County community.
Right.
But certainly an opportunity for us to say thank you this week.
And part of that is not just the revenue they create through taxes, through payroll, and so on, but the ways in which they give back to the community.
Absolutely. We have a lot of giving organizations that give back to help support different agencies, a lot of our nonprofit organizations.
And I can't remember the last time that I saw a, you know, a kids t-ball team sponsored by Amazon.
Yes. You know what very
I mean?
True.
I mean, these are the companies that invest in, you know, these types of community activities, community events, community organizations.
And we have such a strong collaborative community. So what a great time, you know, with Small Business Week. We are kicking off our Small Business Award nominations as well.
Yep.
So great opportunity for individuals to say thank you to businesses by going on our website to fill out a quick, very easy form for those businesses to be considered for our awards program.
Talk a little bit about the Small Business Awards, because this is a long-running program of the Chamber, and it is really cool to recognize all of these local entrepreneurs who, you know, like we said, drive the local economy.
Absolutely. We have like almost about 15 awards that we give out in the fall, anywhere for family-owned businesses, small business person, veteran-owned businesses. We have a whole array of options. So it really just takes an individual to go online, fill out this form to say, hey, thank you, and this is why I want to nominate this business, and gives a brief description.
It also drives home the point that we are fortunate in our community to have such a wealth of diverse small businesses with diverse backgrounds and diverse specialties and
yes,
so on.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, from a Chamber of Commerce standpoint, 95% of our members are organizations, businesses who employed less than 10 employees. So small businesses is truly
Small business. We talk about the SBA
the 500
definition. You know, that's all well and good, but we're talking in some cases really small business.
Really small.
What is the key? You know, when the headlines come out and they, you know, we're number one micropolitan community again, and you know, we have all of this investment and growth and all of that is wonderful. We talk about the Findlay formula that makes that possible. What is the Findlay formula for being so vibrant with respect to small businesses? Because you walk up and down Main Street, and it's not just downtown, but elsewhere around town, you see all of these. So it's one of the things that I've lived in a lot of different communities and visited a lot of different communities. And one thing that really strikes me about Findlay is that there are so many locally owned and operated non-franchise, non-big box store businesses. What is the key to that?
I would say the key to that is people, our pride in our community. It's our ability for our public and private sectors to work collaboratively and have those open conversations and bringing in those educational partners and those small business owners. You know, we also need to keep in mind that our small business owners, yes, they are in downtown Findlay, but they're also in our villages too, like Mount Blanchard, Arcadia, Arlington, and so forth. So really, I believe it comes down to people making those connections and having those collaborative conversations.
And many of those outlying communities, the small businesses are coming back because for a long time, the small towns, your Macombs, your Mount Corys, you know, and so on, Arlington's, people would assume that you're going to drive to Findlay to get what you need. And so you saw a decline in local businesses in those communities, and we're seeing a resurgence in that.
We sure are. In fact, I go back to that word being resilient.
Yeah.
You know, COVID and everything that's transpired, but we have a lot of resilient small business owners, not only in Findlay, but in Hancock County. And so it's important to, you know, shop local wherever we can.
Yeah. And keep that momentum going. Again, we talk about how the pandemic sort of reminded us about the challenges that small businesses are constantly dealing with and the importance of small businesses when they suddenly, you know, went away like that. Now's a good time to kind of keep that going and make sure that we remember just how important they are.
Remember those small businesses, but also, you know, encourage those individuals who have a great idea. So those innovative startups, we want to nourish and help support them with their ideas to make that a reality as well.
It's a good point. Not just celebrating small businesses that currently exist, but also encouraging those who, you know, would like
to start a small
launch
business.
Their own.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Small Business Week this week. Dion Neubauer from the Findlay Hancock County Chamber of Commerce with us this morning. Dion, thanks very much for dropping
by. Chris.
We appreciate it.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
While students at Columbia University are making global headlines for their protests and demonstrations surrounding the Israel-Hamas war, across town at NYU, they're just happy to be home of Cheeseball Man. Have you heard about Cheeseball Man? He has become something of a viral celebrity for his accomplishment of downing an entire tub of cheese balls. Now, I'm not sure if, and I've heard different stories that Cheese Ball Man is either a current New York University student or a recent grad, but anyway, NYU, home of Cheese Ball Man. So he's been promoting this stunt for a couple of months around the city, and when the momentous occasion arrived on Saturday, hundreds of people showed up to watch Cheese Ball Man down an entire tub of cheese balls. And they were gathered there at Union Square Park, chanting things like, "Eat those cheese balls." Eat those cheese balls. The masked cheese ball gobbler completed the stunt in about 30 minutes, and he says, he told news reporters, they were apparently reporters there to cover this story. He tells reporters, there was a moment that I thought I was going to lose my cheese balls, but then people kept chanting, keep it down, keep it down, keep it down. So that gave him the motivation he needed to power on through. He says that he hopes to do it again next year with an even bigger tub of cheese balls. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it isn't quite on the level of what's going on at Columbia University, but NYU, home of Cheese Ball Man. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning. Now, this is a crazy story. And if you have a toddler or you've ever had a toddler, you know that you have to deal with this sometimes. In Charlotte, North Carolina, Ashley Class and her husband first thought that their daughter was just imagining the noises when she came to them and said there were monsters in her bedroom. And again, it's a pretty common thing for toddlers. There are monsters in my room. She said she had been hearing noises, and the parents at first just wrote it off that they had recently watched the film Monsters, Inc., and maybe, you know, she was just imagining it, as most toddlers do. However, then they noticed that there were more bees flying around outside and around their home than they thought was normal. They still didn't put two and two together until they called in a beekeeper who scanned the home with a thermal camera, and lo and behold, they found a hive of over 50,000 bees in the wall of their child's bedroom. 50,000 bees. Apparently, this hive was like ceiling to floor. The beekeeper said it was one of the biggest ones he had ever seen in 40 years of beekeeping. He was fortunately able to remove all 50,000 bees, including the queen, which were moved to a bee sanctuary. But the job is far from over. It's about $20,000 in damage that the bees, for how long they have been there, who knows, but about $20,000 in damage that the classes have to repaired their home, is that we're going to have to seal everything back up, patch the tiny dime size hole that they got into, and then re-insulate the entire wall. The honey that the bees created in their hive also dripped down all over the electrical wires, so they're going to have to rewire at least that part of the house. $20,000 in damage, and it turned out that the buzzing of the bees in the wall was what their toddler had heard all along. There were monsters in her room, as it turned out. Sort of. It's a crazy story. Now, this is the lowest of the low. A couple in Kentucky is charged with burglarizing the home of a woman who had just been involved in a car crash. The Wayne County Sheriff's Office said it had responded to a single vehicle accident on Kentucky Route 92. The car had flipped over. The driver had to be extricated from the car. 4 hours later, the Sheriff's Office says it arrested a couple for burglarizing the home of the crash victim. Apparently, the couple who robbed the victim's home, Lena and Timmy Troxwell of Monticello, Kentucky. The couple had been at the scene of the accident, had seen it happen, and I don't know, I'm assuming that they noted the license plate number of the car, somehow managed to look that up and find out where this person lived, figured, yep, she's been in an accident, she's not going to be home. And they have been charged with second-degree burglary. Isn't that crazy? I mean, that is the lowest of the low. Robbing somebody who'd just been in an accident. Man. There ought to be special circumstances attached to that. second-degree burglary, and just being downright mean. I mean, that's, wow. Let's see, a couple of other items in the broken news. Man under arrest in Nebraska after a search of his car found more than $7 million worth of methamphetamine. I mean, I heard of finding drugs in cars, and you hear those stories from time to time, but $7 million worth of drugs. A deputy of the Seward County Interdiction Task Force in Nebraska says they pulled over a vehicle on Interstate 80. A canine gave the cops probable cause for a search, and that's when they found a trash bag and three totes with a total of 200 pounds of meth. The approximate street value, over $7.2 million. The man, who is from Stockton, California, was taken into custody and turned over to federal authorities. I would think he's in quite a bit of trouble. $7 million worth of methamphetamine. Wow. I'm just saying, and not to make light of drug trafficking, but I'm just saying, if I've got $7 million worth of drugs in my vehicle, I am obeying every traffic law that there is. You know, I am like the perfect driver. You know what I mean? And finally, in the broken news, a Florida man is out on bail. This is a crazy road rage incident. A little unusual, as road rage incidents go. A Florida man is out on bail after allegedly attacking another driver with a plate of pasta. This is according to police report. Nolan Goins, age 46, threw the plate of pasta and sauce, not just the pasta, but also the sauce, at an unidentified victim through an open window on the passenger side of his car and into the driver's side window of the other car, striking the driver in his arms, legs, and torso with the pasta and sauce. Mr. Goins was identified as the assailant after being found with the same food stains on his right sleeve as the victim. They matched the pasta stains, or the pasta sauce stains, and that's how they got their man. Mr. Goins, who, by the way, already has had a number of prior convictions, prior run-ins with the law, was charged with battery. Is that a real charge? Battery by pasta. He was released on $1,000 bail. When asked what sparked the confrontation, apparently Mr. Goins was upset over the other driver's glaring headlights. So he attacked him with the pasta. Well, all right then. There you go. I've got some spaghetti and I'm not afraid to use it. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
How to stay safe when a tornado threatens. The best thing to do is make sure you're prepared. Know your area's tornado risk. The Midwest has a greater risk for tornadoes. Know the signs of a tornado and sign up for your community's warning system. Pay attention to weather reports and identify and practice going to a safe shelter. Take an active role in your safety. Go to ready.gov and search tornado for more information. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Turns out that Ohio is near the top of a list that maybe we don't want to be at the top of. That is a list of states with the most power outages. The Buckeye State landed at number 5 in these rankings, compiled by the nonprofit group Climate Central. Data from this organization shows Ohio experienced 88 major outages caused by weather between the years 2000 and 2023. So this 20 plus year period. Now, mind you, they define a major outage as a service disruption that impacts at least 50,000 customers. So that's pretty sizable. 50,000 customers, and Ohio had 88 of them between 2000 and 2023. Texas had by far the most major outages during the study period at 210 total. Michigan was number two with 157, followed by California and North Carolina, and then Ohio at number five. Now, nationally, most power outages are weather-related, about 80% overall caused by weather. High winds, rain, and thunderstorms responsible for 58% of those, winter storms 23%, and tropical cyclones, including hurricanes, at about 14%. The U.S. Department of Energy estimates that power outages cost American businesses around $150 billion annually. So when the power goes out, a lot of businesses can't do business. There's about $150 billion in costs annually. In 2022, Ohio was second in the nation in a similar study, which ranked the... But so we were second in 2022 and now fifth on this latest list. So apparently maybe we're improving. I don't know if they had the same criteria or not. In that study, the Buckeye State ranked seventh among states with the most outages over the past 20 years. So the data between these multiple studies appears to be pretty consistent, allowing for some differences in the way metrics were tracked and so on and so forth. But it's kind of interesting. And I suppose one of the caveats, one of the asterisks that you have to put in that is that there are some states where probably don't have a good chance of making that list at all. Just because if you're going to define a major outage as one that affects at least 50,000 customers, you're probably going to be predisposed to having cities or states with major cities at the top of that list, like Texas and California and Ohio, Michigan and so on, as opposed to Montana or, you know, Wyoming, the Dakotas, these places where there aren't a whole lot of major cities. It would take a massive power outage to impact 50,000 customers or more. So there is that may skew the numbers a bit. But still, it does speak to the importance of grid reliability and making sure that grid stability is a key issue. Some of these states, including Ohio. Something to think about. Well, they say that April showers bring May flowers, so this is the month to get out and enjoy all of those flowers. Beautiful month to get outdoors, programs and activities in the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rumschlag is here with all the details of what's happening. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, again, it's been beautiful, you know, in between the rain showers. Been right. Beautiful for the past couple of weeks, especially. Really puts us on a good trajectory as we head into May, I guess.
Right. But it's still, you know, we do get back to like reality when it's like 6 degrees because that's the normal. I don't need 80 in April.
We were saying earlier, it's already 80 degrees. Yes. Just think of what the summer is going to be like. But
we're going to get like anyway. A cold streak or something. Watch. It'll be like.
What's going on in the month of May?
Lots of stuff. So again, this is just a little bit of the programming. So HancockParks.com for all of the May programming, everything that's out there. But with this good weather, I'm sure, I mean, we will take it for this Saturday. We've got our 26th annual fish festival, Saturday morning out at Riverbend.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you got to get out there in the morning and it's not going to be there, but I mean, I think the weather's supposed to be.
It's still going to be, you know, it's
nice and not chilly in the morning.
Pleasantly warm.
Right. And I've worked it in the past where it's been rainy and it's been kind of cold in the morning. And so this runs 8 to 11 there, of course, at Gertz Lake. It's free, but we do want you to register at the Lakefront Activity Center. We start that at 7:30, and for the kids, so ages 4 to 15, can come and register. We have different door prizes and stuff. And then throughout the morning, it's we're going to have some trout, of course, stocked later this week. And then after 11, adults can fish. So we ask, you know, Friday and Saturday, like there's... We get like 1,000 fish. There's plenty of fish.
Kids are going to catch something.
They're going to catch some, and they'll catch release. But, you know, for the adults, there'll be plenty there at 11 o'clock for you to fish and stuff. And I know Again, we got door prizes throughout the morning, and then grand prize, I believe, is a pair of Guardians tickets.
Okay.
For sometime this summer. I'm not sure good when deal. That's happening.
Good but, deal.
Yeah, it's a great time. We're going to have bait for sale on site. And so it's always a fun activity for people to want to get out. And people get there early to get their spots.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I worked, it would get there by 7 o'clock, if not before, and there would be people already
staking
the spots.
Although, again, the lake's going to be stocked, so there's probably no bad spot, I would think.
No, not really. I don't think there is.
With that number of fish that you're going to stock it with.
Right. And it's not, I don't know what the magic, you know, they eat corn. Go have a good time. Take the kids and grandkids out. It's a fun morning and stuff. Or and even so if you came out in the afternoon. I mean, so this is Saturday, May 4th.
Saturday in the morning.
In the morning. 8 to 11 is when we run our event. So if you want to come and get a register of kids, have a chance to get a door prize, fishing, outdoor-related prizes.
And it is rain or shine. There is maybe some rain in the forecast, as long as it's not like storming.
Right. Yeah. Happen. One year we had to cancel, I know, because we had a lot of rain and we thought we were going to get flooding and we didn't know if we could get people in and out. And so, yeah, it looks like it's going to be good weather for that. So, yeah, rain or shine. Okay. Should be a good day for
Very good. What else is going on? That's the way to start off the month. I mean, you know, with a big event.
Really all weekend. Again, you don't have to go out during the event if you don't want. If you don't want to, usually the lake does fill and there's, you know, a few hundred people there and stuff. So if you want to do a little later or even go on Sunday.
There'll be plenty of fish left.
Parks are open. Yeah. I almost said 24/7. They're not over 27. Dawn to dusk. So come on out even, you
Very
know.
Good. What else is going on in the month of May?
So we've got our little kids program, our Wee Ones, on Monday, May 13th, and this takes place out at Oakwoods Nature Preserve. We're going to be hanging out there in the porch, kind of grass area, at 10 o'clock. And this month's theme is called Get Moving, and so we're going to be doing acting like the animals and doing different games and activities. We're going to do a hopscotch with animal tracks and things like that. And so this is for the 3 and under with an adult.
Okay.
Other age siblings can attend.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, just show up at 10 o'clock. Hopefully the weather will be great. Again, take advantage of this nice spring weather for those little ones. And that'll be out, again, meeting in the porch area, Monday, May 13th at 10 o'clock.
Okay. And what else to highlight in the month of May?
Well, now that May, again, our warmer weather and our less rainy weather in May, we're starting up our archery classes. And so these are going to take place starting in May and then running through usually October. So we kind of run them like bookend of spring and fall and then throughout the summer. But we are doing one for, we do it for different age ranges. So we have our youth, we do teens, and adults, and then once you've taken one of our classes, and if you've taken it at any point, we also have these open shoots. And so these are for just, hey, I want to come out. We give you kind of brief refresher, and we have those kind of throughout the summer. But we're starting off with one for adults on Wednesday, May 15th. Again, all of our archery take place at Oakwoods Nature Preserve in our Dold Lake area. Okay. So that's when you drive in. There's that front parking lot. It's not the house. That's a private residence. But when you're driving in, there's kind of a drive to the right, the little lake area there. That's where all of our archery programs are held.
Okay.
And so for this one, there is a cost. It's $10 a person. It's going to be at 6:30 that evening. Again, ages 18 and up. And we just need you to sign up by that Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock. I believe I do have one person already. So we have a max of 10. But want to come out after work, grab something to eat, and it's, you know, it's a good activity. Maybe a lot of people have never shot or like, I did it in sixth grade camp.
I was going to say, I think I remember doing that years and years and years ago, either scouts or
everybody had that outdoor
gym
camp
class
in
sixth or something.
Grade. I mean, I grew up in Michigan and we had it. So different kind of bows than what we're using now. I don't think it was as high tech as what we've got. but it's just a fun activity that people can do. So this one's for adults. Again, but we do have some other archery instruction, again, in May, and then we'll have it again throughout the summer.
Anything else to mention to spotlight?
Just that our June programming is getting on the website kind of as I speak, so some of it's out there, and that will all finish up here by the beginning of May. Of course, our summer camps are out there. We have a lot that are filled, so thank you for getting on there and registering, but we do still have some camps
with availability, so you just have to kind of check that. And that's not on our program calendar. That's when you first get on the website. We have like a marquee kind of cycling through some highlights. Mm-hmm. We have our own separate page for summer camps. And okay. then it's broken down by month. So it's going to be those camps that have those close ages, so like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Those camps still have
okay.
availability. Some of them. Like I know our preschool camps are filled. So yeah. we do have some things available. And again, if you missed out, like you said, June program's going up. July, August will be on by the middle of May. So there's still plenty of programming for kids. Yeah. It's just summer camps. And you this fill year up filled quick. Up really yeah. quick. So it's just one of those, if you missed, like I'm like February. Mm-hmm. Put that in your brain, mark yeah. it on your calendar, yeah. start we were searching on our that. Site. You yeah. have to kind of jump on that early to get into
but,
some of our camps.
But still a few spots left.
A few spots left for some All of right. our for some of our camps.
Very good. We've got the link on our webpage at goodmornings.net for all that's going on in the Hancock Park District. Get outdoors and enjoy this beautiful weather. Michelle Roomslog with us this morning. Michelle, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. We invite you to visit us online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, talent, technology, and taxes. The trends and top-of-mind issues among entrepreneurs from ADP's latest Market Pulse study for Small Business Week. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.